All right, so are we drafting blue, red, and blue, black day one?
I really hope that take pans out. Those colors just look so much deeper than green and white. You've got to love Plunder the Trollshaws, which is the card draw with flashback.
Well, and I love Rage into the Valley. I'm just like, what if I could just play
the
colors together that get the cantrip?
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. My name is Ben Warney, and joining me on the line, as always, Mr. Ethan Large Bear Sacks. Got him. We're expecting that one. I've seen you with a few of these in your draft decks so far. You seem to be a fan.
Yes, I am. This is the 3 and Golgari hybrid for a 5/5 with reach, trample, and haste. I mean, it's what the card says. It's not really a bear, but it is large and in charge, I will say.
It's a very bear-themed set. Like they're seeding it for a bear commander deck or something.
I don't, like, maybe they come up at the end. Like I said, I reread The Hobbit with my son, got about two-thirds of the way through until his interest fell off. I don't remember bears being so prevalent. That's sort of my big overall note, is like, this doesn't really feel very
Hobbity.
Make me excited. Like Lord of the Rings, I feel like they really nailed a lot of the sort of iconic things. And this, I feel like, I don't know, things are getting not quite like things that were very prevalent or like just a common, or things that I don't barely remember are like, and this mythic legendary, you're like, who? Like, it's all over the place for me. How did it hit for you flavor-wise on seeing the spoiler?
I mean, it's been a long time since I've read The Hobbit, but I mean, the stuff that I would have expected to be in there is in there, like the heavy, like Smaug, the Black Arrows, you know,
sure.
the characters, some of the events, the old fashioned
bear, big fantasy. Bear, little bear, second bear, fourth bear, like
iconic bears.
Iconic bears. Of all various shapes and sizes. Yeah. Okay. That's my take. But I'm excited to be, I mean, we're not like going in blind, but we are sort of skipping two steps of our usual pre-set cycle. We skipped previews because the full set was already spoiled last week. And we're skipping our sort of first impressions because there was no early access on Magic Arena. And neither you and I were able to pre-release this weekend, so we're kind of going in blind. So maybe our listeners will have a leg up on us if they've pre-released and gotten their hands on the cards. They'll just be shouting at their screen or their phone, like, no, 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 this card's great.
No chance. I've studied thoroughly. I feel prepped, ready to go. Also, we did a practice draft, and you played out games from our practice draft. We're locked.
That's true. I did do that. We are locked with the takes. So it's Crash Course season. Welcome all. It's a small set, hopefully the last small set in a while, but a set nonetheless that we are going to have to dive into. So here's what is going to happen today. We're going to go over the format in sort of broad strokes, talk about the new and returning mechanics, talk about the archetypes and their signposts, what the color pairs are trying to do ostensibly according to Wizards of the Coast. Then we're going to get into our impressions. So we have each been charged to come to the episode with 5 format truths. Truths being, in parentheses, in quotes, italicized, whatever. But these are our what we expect to be defining features of the format. We have graded every card, every common and uncommon in the set, but we will not be doing a card by card grading set review here. We're going to really try and be painting or pointing out the cards that we think are important. So after we do our format truths, we'll talk about the colors, their identities, how we expect those to play out, and what top uncommons and commons exist from each of those colors. Then we'll round things out with some sleeper cards, maybe some notable omissions, any wrap-ups, and call it a day. Ben? Are you excited to go on a journey, an unexpected party journey with me to get the treasure from Smaug?
Absolutely. Always, my friend. Always.
Let's do it. All right. Let's chat about the Patreon first real quick. Patreon.com/Lords of Limited is where folks can go to give back to the show if they so choose. 2 perks over at the Patreon. 1 is access to our Discord, which is getting a facelift hopefully this week. That's my hope, is that we can get this thing thrown out this week. We're going to be doing a facelift to the Discord, which I'm very, very excited about. Been talking to our mods in there about how to just make it a place that fosters even more conversation. I feel like we maybe have splintered things a little bit too much, so we're going to bring things back to a cohesive nature. I'm very excited about that. And then at higher reward tiers, you get access to not only this episode a day early ad-free, but also access to our weekly bonus episode of Lords Unlimited, where this week we're each going to be talking about 10 weird rares from the set. Maybe not weird. Sometimes they're just busted, broken rares, but we're going to be talking about 10 rares each. I've got a second rotisserie draft that I'm in the process of doing that I want to tell Ben about, and he can tell me why I've been making all the wrong picks, and maybe some movies and TV chat. I don't know, who's to say, but that's what we got going on over the Patreon. If any or all of that sounds of interest to you, head on over there and see how you might be able to support the show. And we want to shout out our new patrons the first week that they join. So this week we're welcoming Derek, Tristan, and Russell. Thank you. We really appreciate your support.
Truly cannot say thank you enough.
All right, Ben, kick things off with some new mechanics. What do we got going on in Hobbit?
Storied is up first, which is a static ability that says if you control three or more artifacts, legendaries, and or sagas, you have an enduring story for the rest of the game. So this is kind of like historic from OG Dominaria. It's counting those same types, but you got to have three of them. So it kind of works like the City's Blessing, where like as long as you've got something on the battlefield that says storied, and then you meet the criteria of three or more artifacts, legendary sagas, you are storied for the rest of the game. Much like City's Blessing can never go away, storied works the same way. So our example card here is Thorin Oakenshield, which is red white for a 3/2 uncommon legendary dwarf noble with trample. Got storied and says as long as you have an enduring story, artifacts and creatures you control have ward one.
Yeah, what's your take on storied? Like, I know this might be getting into spoiling format truths territory, but I think we can weave things in as we talk about them here. What do you think? How prevalent is storied going to be for you?
I think it is going to be impossible to stop. Like, once you get something on the battlefield that has storied, you only need two other things that are an artifact or a legendary, and everything is a legendary in this set, including
treasures and exist.
Treasures exist. Equipment is a theme in red white. Mm-hmm. Some of the legendaries create equipment for you. Like, I think it is going to be trivially easy to turn on storied.
And I think worth noting that it's contained in the Jeskai colors, like black and green. I do not think really care about storied. It's primarily going to exist in red white and white blue.
Yes, because of white, but it is red white's theme.
Correct. Yeah. Next up, we have Recruit, which is connive. So anything that says recruit is draw a card, then discard a card. If you discard a non-land card, like connive, you get a ++1 counter. Recruit gives you a 1/1 white human soldier creature token. So for example, we have the Queen of Dale. This is a mythic, 1 and a white for a 2/1 legendary creature. Whenever an opponent casts their first non-creature spell that each turn, you recruit.
It seems like a powerful mythic.
Yeah, for sure. It doesn't seems more skewed towards constructed, I guess. Like, they point a removal spell at this, you get to recruit once.
Yeah. But I mean, recruiting, very good. I think this is an interesting twist on connive. Certainly more powerful than connive, I would say. I would rather have a 1/1 than a +1/+1 counter, generally.
I don't agree.
You don't agree?
I don't agree. I think this is worse than connive. I think looting is great, but I think this is less powerful than connive, is my take.
Okay, well, we're going to agree to disagree and see who's right then. I like recruit quite a bit as a mechanic, and I like blue-white as an archetype doing the recruit go wide
thing. You? You like blue-white?
No. Shocking, I know.
And you'll never guess what color pair I like in this set. What's next?
Next up, we've got hone counters, which is, I think, a much more minor theme. Which is every hone counter on an equipment gives +1/+0 to the equipped creature. So there's going to be an assortment of cards that put hone counters on equipment. And notably, the hone counters don't give, like, they don't change the equipment. They just literally give +1/+0 to whatever the equipped creature is. So we've got Sting Bilbo's Sword, which is 2 for a legendary artifact at rare. It's an equipment. It's got Flash. When Sting enters, put a hone counter on Sting for each creature target opponent controls. Attach Sting to up to 1 target creature you control. and it's got an equip cost of 3. So Sting will literally only be giving your creatures +1/+0, but you can just get hone counters on other equipment that does other types of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Also, I think this should count double for storied. It's artifact and it's legendary.
Ooh.
That is not how it works, but
no, it's not. No double counting, no double dipping there. A couple returning mechanics. One, the goat adventures are back.
Bilbo, where are you off to?
Don't stop, I'm already late.
Late for what? I'm going on an adventure.
Very flavorful, of course. These are split cards that let you play the permanent side and skip the adventure, or you can play an instant or sorcery adventure. And then when you do, the adventure goes into, or the card goes into exile as the adventure resolves, and then you may cast the permanent side of it, with timing restrictions, et cetera, but you may cast it like as if it were in your hand.
Yeah, adventure is excellent. I think it's extremely exciting that it's coming back. It's extremely flavorful that it's coming back, mm-hmm. and I'm here for it.
Yep, agreed.
And lastly, we've got Amass coming back, and this time we're amassing our goblin army for the Hobbit. So you're going to amass Goblins X, which is going to tell you to make a 0/0 goblin army creature token, unless you already control one. So you always have exactly one goblin mm-hmm. army, and then you put X +1/+1 counters on it, where that's how many Amass Goblins X you did. So let's say you amass for the first time and it says amass 2, you're going to make a 0/0 army token, put 2 +1/+1 counters on it. And the next time, if you amass 1, you're going to add a +1/+1 counter to your already existing goblin army token. But yeah, there's ways to sacrifice, get rid of it, etc., so that sometimes you can get value instead of just ultimately growing this 9/9 goblin army, although that is also a way to play the mechanic.
For sure. Yeah, it's interesting that like the play pattern of this mechanic, if you didn't play during Lord of the Rings or during War of the Spark, where Amass was originally printed, like it's just an interesting play pattern of do you want to go tall with this thing? Do you want to try and get rid of your 1/1 or your 2/2 before you amass again because the extra body is good? Similarly, trading off with your opponent's amass tokens is like sort of like, do I want to trade off with this 2/2? And then that leaves the door open for them to be able to amass 2 again and get a fresh 2/2 body, etc. Amass is a very cool mechanic.
Yep.
Support for today's episode comes from Square, the business platform that helps sellers become neighborhood favorites.
Whether you're gearing up for a busy season or just trying to keep up with everyday demand, Square keeps your business running smoothly, from payments and POS to online orders, inventory, staff, and more, all in one place so you can focus on your customers, not your to-do list.
It is peak farmers market season in Pittsburgh, and I love getting out with the whole family on a Saturday morning to get some fresh, high-quality ingredients and support local businesses. But as much as I love farmers markets, I hate the different payment options that each vendor has. Cash only, Venmo, blood sacrifice. It's the Wild West out there. But thankfully, for my cashless wallet, more and more businesses I see are switching to Square, which means I get to buy what I want without hitting the ATM.
Square now offers 3 clear plans, free, plus, and premium, so you can pick the tools you need and grow into more when you're ready. Whether you're starting out and growing fast, their plans are designed to be simple, transparent, and flexible, and the team at Square will be there to help you along the way.
Square helps you run your business more smoothly, bringing payments, operations, and insights together in one place so you're ready for whatever's next.
Right now, listeners can get up to $200 off Square hardware when you sign up at square.com/go/LOL. That's square.com/go/LOL. Get started with Square and build a setup that works the way you do.
All right, that brings us on to the draft archetypes. Only 5, as we are in small set land. First up is blue-white humans. Recruit to draw your second card and create human soldier tokens to defend Lake Town. So 3 signposts per archetype, right? We've got an uncommon, an uncommon hybrid, and a common hybrid. So first up is Bard the Bowman. This is 1 white-blue for a 1/3 with reach. And whenever you draw your second card each turn, put a +1/+1 counter on target creature. It gains lifelink until end of turn.
Yeah, this card is, I think, quite strong. It's a little understated at 3 mana, 1/3 reach. But as soon as you recruit once, you can turn it into a 2/4 reach. You can put the counter other places. I like this card.
Yeah, I really wish that this could recruit itself. Like, even just if when it attacked, you could recruit. I'm a little worried that it's too understated and anemic. That's my my take on this card. I know you're higher on this card, I think, than I am.
Yeah, it's like a B minus. Mostly I just like blue white as a deck, and I think you'll be happy to put Bard the Bowman in a blue white deck.
Makes sense.
Next up is Eagle's Rescue. This is the hybrid uncommon. This is two Azorius Azorius for an uncommon aura. It says enchanted creature gets +2/+2 and has flying, and then you can also pay two Azorius Azorius to return it from the graveyard to the battlefield, attached to target creature you control with power one or less, so presumably those recruits that you're making, and you can activate that only as a sorcery. So this is great to pitch to recruit,
yeah,
and then stick on a recruit, like works very well with the deck.
Yeah, that's the dream, right? Pitch this, get your 1/1, and then you basically get to cast this for free or have this in play for free.
But that's a lot of work for a 4-mana 3/3 flyer, which is also not a great Magic card these days. Phantom Monster's a little washed.
Yeah, but you also got to draw a card off your recruit.
Yeah, you're up a card. Okay, Phantom Monster, draw a card. I'm a little more interested.
That should be good enough, I would say. And then the hybrid is Patient Instructor. It's two Azorius hybrid for a common 2/2 with Vigilance. When it enters, recruit. And I think it's worth noting, yeah, very clean. I think it's worth noting that, like, I don't think recruit is, well, it's tough because I think recruit, just draw a card, discard a card, tacked onto a creature, regardless of you, if you get a 1/1, it's just good. Like, card selection is good. But I think the recruit mechanic itself, like, even though this is hybrid, this really does want to live in blue-white specifically, maybe in red-white if you're doing the go-wide stuff. I'm a little skeptical of this, like, you're not playing this in your blue-green elves deck, for example.
Never. No.
Yeah. Okay.
Takes us on to red-black, which is red-black goblins. Build up your goblin army token with a mass and get scrappy by sacrificing creatures and artifacts.
Yeah. First up is Bolg of the North. It's 3 black-red for a 5/5. When it enters, you may sack another creature. When you do, Bolg deals damage equal to that creature's power to another target creature. And if excess damage was dealt this way, you amass goblins X, where X is that excess damage.
This card is excellent. I think one of the best, or maybe the best uncommons in the set.
Yes. Yes. You don't have to tell me twice.
Yeah. So that card is great. Red black as an archetype also just looks extremely juiced from what I can tell. I don't know what your thoughts are.
Yeah, but I'm trying.
I mean, you've always got eyes for red black.
I know.
As a non red black stan, red black looks extremely juiced in this format.
Red black looks very good to me. Black looks very good to me, but I feel like that's my song and dance every crash course, and I'm really trying to temper it, but I'm wondering if the broken clock is finally right today. So we'll see.
There you go. So our hybrid uncommon is Fearsome Goblin Pair. This is 2 and a Rakdos for an uncommon 1/1 goblin soldier, and when this creature dies, amass goblins 4.
Amass 4 is large.
It's a big boy.
And then the common I really like, Goblin Plate Mail. This is 1 and Rakdos hybrid for an equipment. When it enters, you amass goblins 1, then attach this equipment to the amassed army. Equipped creature gets +1/+0 and has menace, and it's got an equip cost of 4.
This card is dumb. This card is bonkers good.
It's really good.
It's insanely good. Yeah.
Like, it reminds me of, what was the equipment in Final Fantasy? Dragoon's Lance, right? That was a job select, gave the thing +1/+0 and flying.
But that was an uncommon.
That was an uncommon, but it had the same equip cost.
The same equip cost because this gives menace. Like, it's going to make your giant armies very difficult to chump. Goblin Plate Mail is really good. I would say one of the best commons.
All right, next up, we've got Green Black Wolves, which has a ferocious mechanic. With the ferocious mechanic, your army of wargs and woodland creatures is focused on power 4 or greater. So first up is the Chief Warg, 2 black green for a 3/3 legendary wolf. It's got menace. And ferocious, whenever you attack while you control a creature with power 4 or greater, you draw a card and lose a life. Notably not whenever this creature attacks, just whenever you attack. So you could potentially get this trigger the turn you cast it.
But also notably, this doesn't have 4 power. Why'd they have to do green, black, dirty? Like, this could have been such a good card. They just made it like a 4/2 or something. Like, you don't even have to make it a 4/4. But just let yourself definitely get the trigger the turn this comes down. And it helps green, black as an archetype so much.
Why does this bother you, but Bard the Bowman, which has a similar problem of only half supporting the archetype, not bothering you?
because Bard the Bowman is in a functional archetype. Like, blue-white recruit is gonna be functional. It gets to play good, cheap, efficient cards. It gets a mechanic that is good and smooth. Green-black always has this tension. We talked about it in the green-black archetype deep dive of green wanting to do a thing and black wanting to do a different thing and them not marrying well together as a result. And green-black is definitely suffering from that. In this format, green wants to play a big game, creatures power four or greater. Black wants to play a small game with resource denial. I am not a red-black believer, and I think the Chief Warg not being a 4x of however they wanted to do it is a tough look for green-black.
But the next card has four power.
The next card has more than four power. This is the namesake card of the episode, Large Bear. This is three Golgari Golgari for a 5/5 bear, uncommon. Reach, trample, haste, a big boy.
It's really big. I mean, yeah, extrapolating from like two matches that I played in the Magic Online Early Access, but Large Bear was large and in charge. And then the common is Duskwatch Hunter. It's two in Golgari Hybrid for a 3/1. This creature can't be blocked by tokens. And when this creature enters, put a ++1 counter on target creature. So could dump the counter on itself and boom, there's your four power creature.
So you curve Duskwatch Hunter into the Chief Warg, attack, get your card.
Profit.
What's not to like?
What's not? I don't know. You tell me. You're the one hating on it.
I just think that theoretical curve out is not going to happen always all the time. Coming from somebody who has been playing blue-black ninjas a lot in the old Neo Planar Cube. I've had some very streamlined-looking ninjas decks that have rolled over and died because I've mulliganed twice into non-functional, like, can I please just get one of my 6/1 drops so that I can curve into a ninja? Like, curves just don't work the way that you imagine them. When you do go Duskwatch Hunter into Chief Warg and your opponent does nothing, it'll feel great. But any game that you go 3-drop unopposed into 4-drop unopposed and have attacks is going to feel great. I just think this is super vulnerable disruption. I'm not here for the green-black archetype.
Well, that's interesting. I think I'm higher on it than you theoretically, just because I think black's cards are really good. I think green's cards are pretty good. And I think Ferocious might just be a red herring. Like, Ferocious might happen or not, but I think you might just have good cards from each color. And I don't
that
know.
I would buy.
And maybe this is a real, like, you got to do greater than the sum of its parts stuff, but the card quality looks like generically good enough.
I was like, initially you were selling me, and I'm just thinking about some more of the black cards. The black cards that are good want to go in red black.
But what if your black deck is just black green deck is basically just black cards?
That's not selling me on green black as an archetype. That's selling me on black.
You get to play black.
And I agree.
One of the two decks you get to play black in.
Yeah.
All right. What's up next?
Next up, we've got Red-White Dwarves, which tells you to collect legendaries, artifacts, and sagas to empower your storied strategy and gain enduring buffs. So we saw Thorn Oakenshield already. That is the card that was our storied example. Red-White 3/2 Trample Storied gives your things Ward 1 when you have an enduring story. Then we've got Bifur Melodic Rider.
Bifur. Bifur for the real ones out there, yeah.
Bifur. How do you know?
I know. Because I'm a true fan. I'm a true fan.
True fan. Sounds like an audiobook reader to me. Bifur Melodic Rider, 4 and Boros Boros for a 4/5 uncommon dwarf bard who is storied. When Bifur enters or attacks, put a +1/+1 counter on a target creature. As long as you have an enduring story, if an ability of a dwarf you control triggers, that ability triggers an additional time.
Is this good?
This is terrible. It's six mana, 4/5, put a +1/+1 counter on something, and then
twice,
which you should be by the time this comes down,
yeah,
then you get to do it twice. That's still not good enough in a deck that looks like it's going to need to go fast.
Yeah, and the common is Nori, Teller of Tales, 1 and Boros Hybrid for a 2/2 legendary creature dwarf bard. When it attacks, target attacking creature gains first strike until end of turn. I really don't. This is, again, like, I feel like I'm in, I don't know, Groundhog Day territory, but the red-white signposts do not look good to me.
Mm-hmm. I would agree. I mean, Nori is good. Nori's going to make all the equipment that buffs power more powerful for whatever you want to have first strike. Nori being a legend at common in the color pair that wants to have legends and wants to attack, I like Nori. Like, if you just think of Nori as a 2-mana 2/2 first strike legendary, mm-hmm. which it could be, that's a good card for red-white.
Yeah, I guess. But, like, not a like, whoa, this is going to be, like, the best, one of the best commons in your deck. Like, this is a C-.
Sure, but if we look at, that's the problem with the format so far, is that if we look at everything, red-black, we're like, yes, yes, mm-hmm. yes. Every other color pair, we're like, okay, like, maybe. Like, it's yeah. just so clear to me that red-black gets the best cards.
Okay. Lastly, we've got blue-green elves. Accelerate your mana growth for late-game payoffs, but keep the pressure on with landfall triggers. Some sweet-looking signposts in my mind. We've got Sylvan Reveler. 2 green blue for a 3/2. When this creature enters, draw a card, then discard a card. If you discard a land card this way, put it from your graveyard onto the battlefield tapped. And it has landfall. Whenever a land you control enters, you can pay 1 green blue. And if you do, return this card from your graveyard to your hand. I think this card's really good.
Yeah, this card's insanely strong.
This has like Rogue Refiner vibes to me. The like, I mean, that was a 3-mana 3/2 that drew a card. But like, it's 4-mana 3/2. If you have a land, it draws you a card. And then you can get it back after you trade it off.
Well, or you can pitch it to recruit, get it back later in the game.
There's tons of different
play patterns with this card. It's very strong. It is slow, but assuming slow. You get to the late game and are stable, this card will grind through the late game for you.
Mm-hmm.
Next up, we've got Thranduil, Sindarin Liege. This is 2 and Simic. There it is. I was trying to think of the word. 2 Simic for a 2/3 uncommon. Other elves you control get +1/+1. Landfall, whenever a land you control enters, create a 1/1 green elf creature token. And then it's got an adventure, which is Sylvan Rally for 1 Simic. Mill 4 cards and put up to 2 land cards from among them into your hand.
I also really like this card.
This one's really strong, too. The adventure, probably not getting cast too often, but better to have the option than not. Doing nothing on turn 3 is a tough sell. I mean, but assuming that you've played a 2-drop and then like are missing
my
3.
Land drops, yeah.
Sure. Yeah. I agree. This is better to have the option than not. But I'm just like trying to picture playing against a black-red deck and my turn 3 play being Sylvan Rally, and
sure.
I think that is asking for a boatload of trouble. But is this a powerful card? Absolutely.
And then the common is a Mirkwood Nurturer 2 Simic Hybrid for a 3/2 Elf Ranger. When it enters, return up to one other target permanent you control to its owner's hand. If you do, put a +1/+1 counter on this creature. There's not like a ton of ETBs to rebuy on.
Presumably
curve,
it's
I,
land,
I will say.
Like for landfall, right? That's the joke. Elves are landfall.
Oh, that's the joke, is to get back a land. Okay.
Yeah.
Which again, you're not doing on turn 3, but I suppose it's nice to have the option to do later on.
Correct. Or I mean, there's some aura-based removal that you could maybe get your stuff out from under, like a blue. There's a blue Claustrophobia variant.
Yeah, which I'm not buying. I'm selling on that card going into
you're
the
selling,
format.
Huh?
Yeah. Okay, that's the, I mean, we got our takes in there, but that's the sort of the generic overview. If you, you know, didn't play, if you didn't see the spoilers, if you haven't been up on what's going on in the format, those are the archetypes. Those are the new mechanics. Now let's get into our takes, our truths for the format. Ben, you want to kick us off?
I will gladly kick us off. This is where the takes are coming. You thought we got some takes out earlier.
No.
Takes are coming now. Format truth number one, The Hobbit is Lord of the Rings 2.0 in terms of color power rankings. Coming in first, hot and bothered, black is looking very strong. In second, red. In third, blue. But much like Lord of the Rings, I'm secretly going to think blue is better than red and black because I think it is extremely deep at common. Mm-hmm. In fourth, white. And in true Lords of Limited fashion, bringing up the rear, green.
Love it. I can see it. I have some, I think my impressions initially were slightly different, but perhaps slightly different because I have desires. They're tainted by what I would like the format to be rather than what the format might actually be. And I do think the take of like the maybe the pillars of the format being potentially black and blue seems right to me.
Okay. Like
those are the two deepest colors.
I mean, red's also not shabby. It certainly looks like a Grixis format to me in terms of depth at common and uncommon.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about it when we get to our notable commons.
Number two, the official Lords of Limited archetype power ranking. Sorry to speak for you, my friend.
Don't let me in here. Okay.
All right. My official Lords of Limited archetype power rankings. In first place, red black. Strong first for red black. Second, blue white. Third, blue green. In fourth place, red white, with the qualifier of if the format is hyper aggressive, I do like red white a bit more. Mm-hmm. And then I think bringing up the rear, green black, much as I alluded to when discussing the cards earlier, I think this suffers from what we discussed in the green black deep dive. I think green is wanting to do something totally different than black, and I do not think black's best cards want to get paired with green's cards, and I don't think green's best cards want to get paired with black's best cards. Like, I think black very much wants to do the goblins, the sacrificey, the grind out value, that type of game. And I think green very much wants to play an elves matter, blue green landfall rampy strategy.
Yeah, I agree. I think black green is probably going to look either like a heavy green deck. Like, it's going to look like an elves deck with black removal, or it's going to look like a Rakdos deck with some green support. Like, I don't think it's going to be a fusion of the two colors.
Yeah. Which is not, that's not a great sell, because then that means the one color that you're trying to be primary in has to be extremely open.
Yep.
Yeah. So number three, narrowing in on one card here to talk about a broader point, which is we didn't like Lightning Strike in the previous set, Marvel Superheroes. Pinecone Strike is broken, is my third format truth, which is one in a red for an instant, choose one or both, deals three damage to target creature. If that creature would die this turn, exile it instead, or destroy target artifact token, which will be gravy, but I think this card looks incredibly good, and I think it is as good here as Lightning Strike was bad in Marvel Superheroes.
Mm-hmm.
There's an interesting thread. Have you seen Sirkovitz's thread about creature stats and how removal lines up against the creature stats?
I have not.
So basically what he's saying is that there's, and not that he's saying, like, he did an analysis. This is all factual stuff about power and toughness and removal and things. But that there's, like, if you look at bell curves of sets, there's like a plethora of X2s in The Hobbit compared to other formats. Like, it's way an outlier on like an inverse bell curve. And so there's a ton of X2s, and then there's not many X3s. I think I'm saying that right. And then there's a bunch more X4s. But basically the conclusions he was drawing from that was that you're going to be trading down on removal a lot. Like, there's a lot of cheap X2s and removal's a little more expensive. So it basically sounded like he was pitching, hey, we might be in like an Ixalan type. He didn't actually say that, but that was kind of what I was remembering and drawing away from it, because that was the first format we started podcasting and we valued removal, but the removal was too expensive. And really, you were supposed to play stuff like One with the Wind on your two drop and just try to, you know, cheese your opponent out with your 4/4 flyer.
Mm-hmm.
I don't quite agree with Sirkovitz's takeaways, but what I do agree is that I don't think there's quite as much of a pinch on cheap interaction as he thinks, but I think the cheap interaction is going to be great. And I think worth noting, I think it's very interesting that there's a lot of cheap X2s and just a lot of X2s in general running around.
I think where removal sits in this format, I like this take a lot. I think how removal sits in this format is going to be matchup dependent potentially. Like, I could see there being decks where 1-for-1 removal is great, and I could see matchups where 1-for-1 removal does not get the job done. Like, and there are bombs running around, or like bombs / like archetype engine cards at higher rarity, at rare and mythic, that you're going to need to answer. But then, like, the trinkety recruit and amass stuff, you're like, I don't want to point anything at those.
Correct. Yeah. Like, I think blue white's going to play a pretty resilient game against targeted removal, but Pinecone Strike, if you just look at that list of uncommons, Pinecone Strike crushes everything. Like, Sylvan
Points
Reveler,
and
you thought you were going to be recurring that from the graveyard?
Yep.
Nope. You tapped out on turn four for the Chief Warg hoping to get a card draw trigger? Nope. I'm trading two mana for your four mana. Like, Pinecone Strike looks so good.
Nice.
Number three, we are back to blackjack theory, and you want your deck to be hot.
Love
it. So for those of you who weren't around, blackjack theory was we were talking about just individual cards mattering. I think this was during Edge of Eternities that we floated this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you were trying to count, basically like in card counting, you plus some cards get a plus one, some cards get a zero, and some cards get a minus one until you're trying to figure out if the deck is hot. And so we were saying, like, basically cards that matter are plus ones, cards that are good, like in the right home in your deck, but are not premium cards are zeros. And then cards that actively don't really belong or you don't really want in your deck are minus ones. And I think when I look at the spoiler and when I grade cards, like cards very clearly go in one of those three buckets to me of power level. And I think there's a lot of cards that are bad slash meh in the format. And I think you're really wanting to avoid those, or at least if they're on the meh side or the synergy meh side, like you want to make sure there's zeros in your deck and not minus ones.
Love this. Love this take.
And number five, because of blackjack theory, you're going to be able to play off-color decks, especially blue-red and blue-black, because I think that's how juiced the Grixis cards are.
Interesting. Oh, I like this take, too, especially because there's like the reason you wouldn't want to do this or wouldn't be able to do this is, like, I mean, I know Secrets of Strixhaven wasn't a small set, but there were, like, 10 gold cards at common or uncommon for each color pair. So it was basically impossible to do an off-color, an off-supported color pair. But
correct. But here they're hybrids. There's two hybrids. You're giving up hybrids. One card per color pair, and they're mostly not great outside of the red-black one, and I think that one is splashable.
Oh, this is my favorite take of all. Just because it gets me excited that maybe we'll be able to
format
paint outside the lines a little bit. Yeah.
So that's my hope as well. So I brought the takes. Brought them hot and fresh.
Love it. All right. My format truths. Number one, Hobbit will be a resource war. I think it's interesting because as I was looking through my impressions from playing the few games that I did on Thursday was that 2-for-1s were impactful. I was like, every time someone did it, I was like, yep, that feels real to me. Like, whatever, even the 2-drop in black that makes you discard a card, or, you know, the 3-mana 2/2 in black or Bilbo in blue that comes in and draws a card. Like, they felt impactful. And so I was like, maybe they're scarce. And then looking through the spoiler, they're not scarce. Like, there are quite a few 2-for-1s in the sense of whatever equipment that come with an amass token or whatever, like things that are multiple pieces of cardboard. But I don't think that's going to reduce their impact. I think 2-for-1s are abundant and impactful.
I agree. I mean, I haven't played the games. I watched your games play out some, but I'm very high on those, especially those common 2-for-1s in blue and black.
Number two, we already alluded to this, but I said you can't stop storied, so don't try. And not to say that you don't have to, like, move towards it in draft, like make some specific pick orders to try and make sure your storied count is up. But I'd assume both red, white and blue, white players will get there. So just like, don't try and pick off their legendary if they're 2 out of 3 away from getting storied. Like, I just don't stop it.
Correct. Unless it's something you already wanted to kill, in which case it's gravy, but
yeah,
definitely not with the intention of stopping storied.
Number three, I said looting is great. 1/1 tokens are not. That's where I think we disagree quite a lot. Like, I'm very happy that recruit exists as a looting mechanic, but I think 1/1 tokens are worse than +1/+1 counters. Like, as I was looking at the creatures, I was thinking, like, would I rather, it's not always the case, but like the blue 3/1 flyer, would I rather that could be a 4/2 flyer or have a 1/1 on the ground? I think I'd rather it be a 4/2 flyer if I could.
Really?
So, yeah. Those are my takes.
So can I pose this back at you? Which is Fabricate was basically a similar mechanic choice that didn't involve looting, but let you choose +1/+1 counters or 1/1 token. With Fabricate, more frequently you would choose the 1/1 token, right?
That is true. That is true. With Fabricate, you would do that. But I think like that also, you know, Fabricate gave you a 1/1 artifact in a format that cared about artifacts more. I don't know.
And I think it's blue white cares about the recruits. That would be what I would pose back to you is that I think from what I've seen of white, I don't like the way white looks, But if white is going to be good, it certainly seems like there is going to be a go wide recruiting strategy. Like there are several mass pumps in white,
yeah,
several
ways white,
to make your recruits relevant creatures, that kind of a thing.
White has two common ways to mass pump your team. It has a 4-mana +2/+1 to the team, and it has a sorcery speed for that you can flash back for 5 mana. So it works with recruit in that you can pitch it, then it's a flashback spell that sits there, and you pay 5 mana to put a +1/+1 counter on all of your creatures. Yeah, I guess it remains to be seen. But my initial take was I felt like the 1/1 tokens weren't doing a ton. But maybe you're right. Maybe Connive is better. Number four, The Hobbit is a lot more about creature types than the commons let on. I think looking through the spoilers at just the commons and uncommons, it's very easy to be like, who's elves? Who's wolves? You get the dwarves theme, fine. You don't really get the humans theme. Then you look at the rares and you're like, oh, this is where the reason to do creature types exists.
Which is nice, because that's going to make it feel tribal all the time.
Correct. And number five, I think the format will boil down to grindy black decks versus assertive white decks. Though I'm wondering now if is it grindy black decks versus powerful blue decks? Not sure, but...
Well, I don't think black is grindy. To me, black sits like green-black elves did in Lorwyn Eclipsed, where it got to play both the best early game and the best late game. Like, I think black gets to do it all. Like, if you're curving out with the goblin equipment that's a 2/1 menace, mm-hmm. and then you're amassing, like, that is putting pressure on your opponent, but you also just get great cards that are going to let you compete in the late game as well. So... I think black gets to do it all. And then I do think blue decks are trickier, want to play for the late game, a crew card advantage. There's a lot of good card advantage blue cards.
Great. Well, maybe white gets left by the wayside, which would be fine by me. All right. Shall we dive into the colors and talk about some individual cards we want to highlight?
Let's do.
All right. Kicking things off with white. What did you have to say about white?
Not a lot of positive. I said white's commons look severely underpowered compared to the other colors. There's a bit of a go wide theme happening. And then in terms of uncommons, this was a theme for many of the colors, but felt like white only had two real uncommons to me and the rest were pretty meh. And it seems like white is more focused on red white at uncommon than it is blue white.
Yeah. I mean, a theme across the board for me was I was more excited about the commons than the uncommons. Like, I thought about that being a format truth for me, that like commons are back or whatever. But I feel like I've done that enough before that it didn't seem unique enough here. But I did find the uncommons mostly ho-hum. But the uncommons, I have long lists of both notable and sleeper commons. I had a lot of commons that I was excited to talk about. In the uncommons, the first uncommon I have is Celebrate the Mountain King. Pretty straightforward here. 3 and a white for an enchantment. When it enters, for each opponent, exile up to 1 target non-land permanent that player controls until this enchantment leaves the battlefield. And when this enchantment enters, recruit.
Yeah, that card is absolutely premium. It's one of the best uncommons in the set, and I gave it my number one slot as well.
And number two, I have Eagle of the Great Shelf. It's 4 and a white for a 2/5 flyer. When it attacks, it gets +1/+1 until end of turn for each other creature you control.
It's a big boy. Definitely a payoff for having gone wide, tough to kill with 5 toughness. I went with a cheaper card that I thought played into what white was wanting to do a little bit earlier, which is Iron Hills Blacksmith. This is 1 and a white for a 1/1 with double strike. When this creature enters, create a colorless equipment named Axe with equipped creature gets +1/+0 and equip 2. This is giving you 2 pieces of cardboard. This is giving you something that likes to wear equipment. It's giving you something that's going to be around for story that is impossible to get off the battlefield. So I like Iron Hills Blacksmith.
I do too. I wanted to talk about a third one, an honorable mention card here in The Mountain King's Return. There was a lengthy discussion about this card during preview season with the Lord's Limited Discord, and I feel like it's worth talking about because it's a little hard to unpack. So it's a saga for 2 and a white. Chapter 1, you recruit. Chapter 2, return target creature card with mana value 3 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield. And Chapter 3, put a +1/+1 counter on up to 1 target creature. So, like, let's say you do have a 3, you pitch a 3-drop or a 3-drop has died, and you you get that back with the second chapter of this card. What this card is getting you is a loot, a 1/1, that creature, and a +1/+1 counter. Which is, it's a lot. It's a lot of juice from a 3-mana play. But that if you have the 3-drop is such a big if, that that's why I left this off my list.
Yeah, it's not worth missing on that to me.
Yeah. Be real like bad.
It's a disaster if you don't have a 3-drop in the graveyard.
Right, you just can't play it. Well, I mean, you could get a 2-drop back. That would be fine. But...
yeah, but like
having
cards
nothing
in the graveyard, cards in the graveyard at that point in the game, like you have to have it in your hand to be able to pitch it.
Correct.
I don't know. It is a powerful card. I'm sure you can build your curve in such a way that you have a lot of 2s and 3s, and this is a good card for you. I just think you have to do work, whereas these other two cards that I picked require no work.
Correct.
No assembly required.
All right. Notable commons for white.
It's a tough look. I settled on just one, which is Magnificent End. 4 and a white for an instant, deals 5 damage to target creature, costs 3 less to cast if it targets a tapped creature.
I ended up putting that on my sleeper commons list because, I don't know, I'm worried that white is so aggressively slanted that this card isn't going to be as good, but that argument is never really holds water for this kind of effect. It's probably just good. This is white's common removal spell, like full stop.
That's it.
Right?
That's all it gets. Yeah. Like that's why I put it on there. Ultimately, like each color got about one or one that it seems functional. Mm-hmm. And I think they need to go on the notable commons list.
I'm surprised that you don't like Ardenville Tactician 2.0. Velvet Wing Butterflies is the 2 and a white 2/2 flyer, and it has an adventure, Gaze and Wonder, 1 and a white instant, tap 1 or 2 target creatures. I will be really surprised if this card isn't good.
I think it's kind of homeless. I think it is. I think there's been power creep, first of all, and it is less good than Ardenvale Tactician. I think it is a 2/2 versus a 2/3, which is relevant. Mm-hmm. And I think it doesn't have types. There's not adventure payoffs here the same way there were in other formats. Like, is it going to be fine? Probably. It's hard for me to imagine wanting to pick 4 copies of that card and feeling good about it. And I'm sure like the data is going to come out and I'll eat my words or whatever. But as of right now, I don't love that card. Not high on it.
Okay.
I think it is fine. And if it had types, maybe, but it missing types is also not a great look for it.
Okay.
Is that in your top commons?
It is, yeah. This is okay. The white card that made its way into my top commons list. What's going on with blue, your fave color?
Blue, super deep at common. It's got a good mix of creatures, card advantage, interaction. It's got great synergy with Recruit. At uncommon, unfortunately, only really 2 real uncommons again, and maybe not even 2, because I was kind of high on that 6-mana counter spell, and then after doing the draft and never wanting to pick it, I was like, that must not be very good. I don't actually want to pick it out of a pack of Magic cards. Mm-hmm. But there's only really 2 real uncommons, and I was not impressed with blue at uncommon, but very impressed with it at common.
It's interesting, like, I like 3 of blue's commons, and then I think it falls off a cliff. I mean, and there's only, what, 10 or 11, but, like, I'm a little worried because blue seems like it's pulled in different directions somewhat. Like I see there's the draw 2 stuff, which like is sort of supported by Recruit, but I think blue only has like 2 Recruit cards. Then there's a lot of there's blink stuff. You notice that? A lot of like exile 2 things you control, but like other than Bilbo, are there good blink targets? It seems to slant, like it seems to want to be aggressive in some ways without having aggressive threats. I'm a little worried about what blue has going on. Like I see the power level of the top cards, but then in terms of what those second and third tier cards are doing, I have more questions.
That checks out to me, but I think the fact that it gets a very clear 1, 2, 3, or maybe the list is even slightly longer than that, that's way better than what white gets, I think.
For sure.
All right, so blue uncommons. Number 1, the namesake character of the story, Bilbo Luckwearer. This is 1 and a blue for a 1/1 halfling rogue. It can't be blocked. And whenever he deals combat damage to a player, draw a card, then discard a card. He's also got an adventure, Burglar's Plot. This is the old switcheroo. 4 and a blue for a sorcery adventure. Exchange control of 2 target non-land permanents that share a card type.
They did it. They finally made Switcheroo playable for me. They just tacked it on for free to a looter.
Absolutely. This card is, I think, the full package.
Yes, I totally agree. And the joke here is to, you know, you exchange your 1/1 recruit token for their best creature.
Yes, and I think not a joke. That's a good thing to be able to do.
For sure.
So yeah, Bilbo is great. Very excited about Switcheroo. And I think good that blue gets a way to get something very problematic off the battlefield for free, basically.
Yeah.
All right, number two for me in Blue's Uncommons is Old Fat Spider Can't See Me. This is 2 and a blue for an enchantment saga. Chapter 1, target creature you control gains hexproof for as long as this saga remains on the battlefield. That's mostly flavor text-ish, I think, if this is coming down any sort of reasonably early in the game. Mm-hmm. Number two, this one's where it starts to be relevant. Prevent all damage that would be dealt by up to one target creature for as long as this saga remains on the battlefield. So you can stop your opponent's best threat for a few turns. And then chapters 3 and 4, draw a card.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's not quite divination, because divination, you kind of want the, like, burst of cards a lot of times. But it is the same mana cost. You do get the two cards eventually, plus a little extra something something. I think the later in the game this comes down, kind of the better, unless what you're really trying to do is refill your hand. I also had this as my second. We have the same 1 and 2 blue uncommons. But I would have loved something a little better than Old Fat Spider Can't See Me to put on my list.
I agree. I don't love Blue's Uncommons.
Blue's Commons, though, perhaps the best of the bunch. Bilbo Baggins Burglar. 2 and a blue for a 2/1. Legendary creature halfling rogue. When it enters, draw a card. And it has an adventure. Take a glance for a single blue sorcery. Scry 2.
I mean, that card's juiced. Could be an uncommon. And the fact that it's common is awesome for blue. Yeah. Like that Bilbo, I think, is better than Bilbo Luckwear. I think is better than the uncommon Bilbo.
Ooh, yeah, probably. I mean, just get the card straight up.
Yeah, and preordained. Like, you're just never going to have a non-functional draw when Bilbo Baggins Burglar is in your opener.
It's not preordained. It just scries.
I mean, but the whole card, but it's giving you the scry to make sure that you get a functional draw, and then you're going to stick this 2/1. You're going to be up a card. Like, Bilbo Baggins Burglar is, I think. Like, I think the format goes like Pinecone Strike 1, Bilbo Baggins Burglar 2 in terms of common power rankings.
Yeah.
And maybe they're reversed. It wouldn't shock me if Bilbo's ahead of Pinecone Strike.
I would put Bilbo number 1. I just think take a glance on turn 1 is going to feel oppressive. You're just going to be like, cool, must be nice.
Yeah. All right, also from blue, I have Plunder the Trollshaws. This is 1 and a blue instant, draw a card. If this spell was cast from a graveyard, draw 2 cards instead. It's got flashback for 3 and a blue. It's an instant. It's going to be great to pitch to recruit. Like, this card is the full package.
Yes. I also really like Plunder the Trollshaws for the exact reason of, like, pitch it to recruit or pitch it to Bilbo Luckwear or whatever. Get it in your graveyard and then have a draw 2 hanging out. And then I have a third blue common on my notables list. It's Uneasy Partings. 3 and a blue for an instant. Target creature's owner puts it on their choice of the top or bottom of their library, and it costs 1 less to cast if it targets an attacking non-token creature.
Yeah, that card's good. I left it off my list. I think it's a little expensive for the types of threats you're going to want to be interacting with to not get them totally gone, but I can see it.
What do you like? You have the enchantment on there? I think that card stinks.
No, I've got a better card. I'm going to make recruit come fully together for you here.
Okay.
My last blue common, which this is my hottest take, but I like where I'm putting my hot take, is Lakeshore Apothecary in the top blue commons. This is 1 and a blue for a 1/2 vigilance. When you draw your second card each turn, put a +1/+1 counter on this creature. I think this Sahagin has major Sahagin vibes, and I think it's going to turn all of your recruits into make the recruit plus get a +1/+1 counter on this creature, and as vigilance, it is going to be the battlefield bully.
Okay, I'm here for it. Love it.
I think blue's got lots of great ways to draw cards, and I think Lakeshore Apothecary really is going to tie the room together in the blue-white recruit decks.
Well, and it's what it's got going for it is it's a non-legendary common that you can load up on.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, Bilbo also kind of solves that problem for himself, because at least the second copy you can take a glance and, like, have him chill in exile.
Sure.
Until the first one dies.
Right, exactly. Moving on to what we think is the best color, black.
Black, yeah.
I know we don't have the same number one here. I have Gollum the Abandoned. Oh, I should tell you what I think about black first. Excuse me. I said I'm scared to say it, but it seems like the best color to me. Has 4+ banger commons, strong synergistic themes, and lots of 2-for-1s.
Yeah, black is great. I said black works in red black at common. There's not much for green black. It gets 4 real uncommons, which is nice after blue and white seeming to struggle at uncommon. And I am still not a believer in green black at all.
Yeah. So my first common is Gollum the Abandoned, or first uncommon rather. 1 and a black for a 2/2. It can't block. When it enters, exile up to 1 target card from an opponent's graveyard. Each opponent loses 2 life. And you can pay 2 mana, sack an artifact or creature, return this card from your graveyard to your hand, activate only as a sorcery. I just think this thing kind of hits like a truck on turn 2, like deals damage. Exiling flashback spells is going to feel extremely oppressive when you think you're like doing it with Recruit or whatever and pitching a spell you want to cast and this gets to nab it. And I think the threat of recursion is quite real in terms of just when this coming in and making you lose 2 is big. And it's not like this is on turn 2, this can get in for 2-4 damage before they can eat it, you know?
Sure, yeah. I mean, it's not going to nab something the first time around if it's coming down on turn 2. That would
They still lose 2 life.
Oh.
Yeah.
I don't think I had realized that about the card. Yeah, this is very strong.
It's a lot of damage.
It's a lot of damage. Okay, I like it.
And my number 2 is Down to Goblin Town. 2 and a black for a saga, chapter 1. Target opponent reveals their hand. You choose a non-land card from it. That player discards that card. Chapter 2, Amass Goblins 1. And chapters 3 and 4, target opponent loses 1 life and you gain 1 life.
Yeah,
Toll of the Invasion plus.
Also in my number 2 slot, that card is quite strong. My number 1 is different. It is Gnashing of Teeth. This is 1 black-black for a sorcery. Choose 1, target creature gets -5/-5 until end of turn. If that creature would die this turn, exile it instead. Also, you can choose to give creature's target player controls -1/-1 until end of turn. Like, why does black get to wreck all of blue-white's work in one card for free at no cost? Like, this is absolutely premium. It's going to be super annoying to play against.
Yeah, yeah. Sweep up the 1/1s or all the X/1s. Can also do it post-combat to finish things off as well. Like, I really like that card.
Yeah, black's uncommons look pushed.
All right, black's commons. I almost wanted to leave this one off, but that felt, I don't know, irresponsible. But Bilbo's Deadly Slice is black's common I'm least excited about that I put on my list. It's 1 black-black for an instant, destroy target creature.
I did leave it off. Murder's washed.
Murder's washed. I think that's a fine take. You know what isn't washed is, what was it called?
Phyrexian Rager, baby.
Well, Phyrexian Rager, sure. We can talk about Phyrexian Rager. Rage into the Valley. 2 and a black sorcery. You draw a card and lose a life and amass goblins 2.
Love that card. What's not to like?
I mean, just love this card. Ravenous Rats is back. Stony Voiced Goblins. 1 and a black, 1/1. Goblin Bard. When this enters, each opponent discards a card. And I am buying on Ravenous Rats in this format. I think
so. That's on the notable commons list for you.
That's on notable commons for me. I think this is really good. I think so. Flashback being in the set makes these effects worse, like, because then, you know, when you get to just pitch a spell,
that's
that you can
why
cast
that's
later,
why I left it off. Yeah,
but I think this has relevant types. Sacrifice is a real theme, so having this as something to sacrifice is good. And there's equipment running around, so you get to turn this into a real body. Those three outweigh the fact that there's like 4 flashback cards in the set for me.
I buy that. And for those of you in the audio audience who are missing YouTube, during that pause there, I got a Dikembe Mutombo finger wag from Ethan.
Not in my house. Stony Voiced Goblins is good. And then Crude Bent Blade is on my notable commons list as well. This is 2 and a black for an equipment. When it enters, target opponent sacks a creature of their choice. Equipped creature gets +2/+1, and it has an equip cost of 2.
You're going hard on the black commons.
I think this card's really good. I mean, what was it? Curse of the Black Mages from Final Fantasy was they sack a creature and you get an 0/1 mage.
Yep.
this has very similar vibes to me. And like, and the formats are very similar in that I think I was originally thinking that card wouldn't be good enough because there's job select tokens running around. Like, there were all these tokens. And so how could this possibly be good? And it just was. And yeah, sometimes they're going to get to sack a 1-1 recruit or an amass one token. Fine. I still have a real card. And the times where you get a real card from this and you have this equipment is just going to feel backbreaking.
That was what I put Crude Bent Blade in my sleeper commons. And I posed the question of, is this better than the murder variant?
I think it is. I think I want the first copy of Crude Bent Blade over the first copy of Bilbo's Deadly Slice.
It's interesting. Like, but, and then the other question I want to pose to you is, at the end of a draft, you think you're happy with three copies of Crude Bent Blade? That's a harder one for me to say yes to.
I think so. I mean, I guess the Curse of the Black Mages from Final Fantasy, like, they sort of chained together well because the O1s then drained them off of subsequent ones, and this one doesn't do anything on its own. But like,
correct. That's my feeling, is that like the first Crude Bent Blade that you get that's an equipment is going to feel much better than the second and third copies. But
I guess it just depends what my creature count is. Like, how many bodies do I have? I'm going to be thrilled to curve Stony Voiced Goblins into Crude Bent Blade, the whole format.
Sure. Like, just, yeah. I like Crude Bent Blade, to be clear. I'm just asking some of the questions that I asked myself for why it didn't make my notable commons. And I think it was close to making that list for me. And I do think I like the take that it's better than murder.
Yeah, I think so. Any other black cards that we missed before moving on?
That's it for me. I only had Rage on my list.
All right. Red. For Red, I said, seems split down the middle with Goblin and Dwarf support, and slightly awkward to me that there's not much overlap. Like, I don't think that either half is bad, but I wonder about, like, wanting to start Red. Like, black, and I guess even blue in some senses, I feel like if I start in those colors, all the colors cards work well with each other in a way. And red, I feel like you either have to decide, are you Goblins Red or Dwarf Red?
I agree. Yeah, that certainly checks out to me. But I think, again, red's cards, certainly it's commons. It's very deep at common. I think its commons want to go in red-black more than they want to go in red-white.
Yeah. Okay. Red's uncommons. Number one for me, I said Misty Mountains Raider. It's 4 and a red for a 4/4 goblin soldier. Whenever you attack, amass goblins 2. This is worse than versions of this that we've seen in the past, because often this, when you attack effect tacked onto a 5/5 or a 5-drop exists in red, the thing has haste. So this doesn't have haste, so it's not going to be able to enable things by itself. But I think still this is a really strong card.
That didn't make my list, but it's good.
And then in the number two spot, I have Snow Slope Hunter, 2 and a red for a 2/3 goblin ranger. And you sack another creature or artifact, exile the top card of your library. You may play it until the end of your next turn, activate only during your turn and only once each turn.
Yeah, that card is great and was in my number two slot as well.
What was your number one?
My number one was Bothersome Noisemaker, 1 and a red for a 2/2 at uncommon. Whenever you cast a non-creature spell, amass goblins 1.
Yeah.
I think that card is just an efficient little 2-drop package that is going to be extremely annoying until you get it off the battlefield.
Mm-hmm.
Red, right, much like black, though, again, has 4 to 5 real uncommons, like just a way deeper roster of uncommons than blue and white got.
Yes. All right. So we've talked about Pinecone Strike, which is the only notable red common on my list. I have plenty in my sleeper commons list, but it sounds like you want to give some love to red outside of Pinecone Strike.
I only have one more, which is Goblin Town Flunkies, which is 1 and a red for a 1/1 haste. When this creature enters, amass goblins 1.
So, and that's just because it's multiple bodies for red black sacrifice.
Correct. And multiple bodies for wearing equipment. If you're excited about Crude Bent Blade, it's multiple bodies to wear your Crude Bent Blades.
Mm-hmm.
This type of effect is pretty historically great and an effect I like a lot as a Magic player.
Yes. I'm excited to talk about the sleeper commons. But let's move on to green, which I said I said Trample is the scariest thing that Green brings to the party. Green has stats, but with the amount of a mass and 1-1 recruits running around, Trample is what will really push it over the top of those little 1-1 tokens.
Yeah, you're definitely going to need Trample. I didn't love Green's commons. I think Green-Black's a very tough sell. I do think Blue-Green gets some good stuff at common and some great stuff at uncommon. Green's uncommons as mono-green are a woof for me. Like,
I agree.
Did not love Green's uncommons, and I'm pretty down on Green overall in a shocking Lords of Limited twist.
We're due. We've been loving up on Green this year, I feel like. I think we're due to say Green's a stinker. Yeah, I had a tough time with Green's uncommons. Number one I said was Bjorn's Hospitality. This is one and a green for an enchantment. Landfall, put a counter, a +1 counter on target creature you control. And then for 7 mana, you can have this enchantment become a bear creature in addition to its other types and gains this creature's power and toughness are each equal to the number of lands you control.
Yeah, that is fine. Don't love it. Don't hate it.
And then in the number two spot, I gave it to Old Fat Spider. 4GG for a 6/7 reach, can't be blocked by creatures with power 2 or less, and whenever this creature becomes the target of a spell or ability an opponent controls, draw a card. This is a good card. This could be a common by today's standards.
Yeah, I mean, it is a good card. Once you stick it on 6 mana, it's going to be very annoying.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
Yeah,
I left that off my list. We've got actually 4 different green uncommons here. Number one for me, I thought this was a pretty clear number one, so I'm surprised to not see it on your list, is Troll Negotiations. The 2GG sorcery, put 2+1/+1 counters on target creature you control, then it fights target creature and opponent controls. Double hunt the week.
So much instant speed removal. Like, can you, like, just casting this, you really just have to pick your spots for this. And I would just much prefer this to be cheaper and less counters. I don't, like, we had Hunt the Week like 10 years ago. Then we've sort of graduated to Hunt the Week now costs 3 mana. And now we're back to, okay, but it's Hunt the Week, but you get a second counter. I don't care. I'm scared to cast this into open mana.
I agree, but oftentimes as the game's developing, people are tapped out. And I think, like, if you and your opponent are each going 2-drop, 3-drop, and your turn 4 play while they're tapped out is kill your thing, make my 3-drop into a 4/5 or whatever, and then it's got 4 power and is hard to kill for my ferocious stuff. I don't know. I like Troll Negotiations.
It's probably the right top uncommon. I'm just so down on it.
I agree. I don't love Green's uncommons. My number two is Woodland Weavemaster. This is 1 and a green for a 1/2 vigilance. Whenever another elf you control enters, this creature gets +1/+1 until end of turn, and you can tap to add X mana of any one color, where X is this creature's power. Spend this mana only to cast elf spells and activate abilities of elf sources.
You're never taking this as your, like, reason to draft elves.
I agree. I said I didn't like Green's uncommons. This is a C+ at best. It could get some explosive starts, much like Smoke Crater or whatever it was for elementals in whatever. Like, you can play a 3-drop elf and then tap this for another 2-drop elf and then crack in for whatever. Crack in for 2. I don't know. Seems like it does maybe some stuff.
Quarrel made my list of commons. The 1 and a green instant, target creature you control deals damage equal to its power to target creature and opponent controls.
Yes.
I kind of wanted to put whatever medium bear on there, the 4 mana 4/5.
That seems sus,
but I left it off. So yeah, only Quarrel made my list.
Oh, I got Wood Elves on there, baby. 2 and a green for a 1/1. When it enters, search your library for a forest card, put that onto the battlefield, then shuffle.
This made my notable omissions list. Boom!
Notable omissions? Wow. And tell me why you don't like an elf with types that gets a land that the archetype cares about landfall?
I just think this is a stinker of a card. I think, like, I just think 3 mana 1/1, get a forest. I guess maybe green blue will care about it, but
green blue is definitely going to care about it.
I don't know.
And green black isn't necessarily going to want it, so you're going to get it.
But does that make it a notable common?
I think it's, I mean, if green blue is any good at all, Wood Elves has to be a good card, right?
I guess. I do not like where this sits on the curve. I don't know. Maybe this is a terrible take. This, I'm basically this based off of just the games that I played, but playing Wood Elves did not feel good. But I did not have
it. Did not feel relevant.
Yeah. Yeah. But I had it in green, black, not green, blue. So caveats there. And obviously extrapolating from one match of Magic as well. But I just didn't like the card.
Okay.
I assume Goblin Plate Mail is on your list as well.
You better believe it is.
Yeah. Can we talk Sleeper Commons?
We can talk Sleeper Commons. I also, before we get to Sleeper Commons, had a general thought, which was maybe contrary to yours, but the commons are largely uninspiring past the top 10. And I had a hard time getting to 10 that mattered.
Yeah, I had a different take. I think the commons were far more interesting than the uncommons. Like the uncommons for a lot of the colors, for green and white, for sure. I could have been like...
Even blue. Blues aren't great.
And even blue. But the commons, I had like four from each color that I'd be like, at the very least, I'd like to talk about this, was how I felt.
Sure. Yeah.
Which I don't know if that means that they matter or not, but they were much more interesting cards to me. Or seemed like there seemed to be cards where I was like, is there potential here? Whereas with the uncommons, I was like, I don't think there's any potential here.
All right, so talk to me about Sleeper Commons.
Okay, let's start with, I don't have these in color order, so we're just going to bop around. I want to talk about Tidings of War. It's a single red.
Number one on my list as well.
Single red for a sorcery, amass goblins one, and it has flashback for three and a red, and if you cast it from your graveyard, you amass goblins three instead. There's just a lot of really cool 1-2 punches with this, like playing it on turn one is good, curving it into Goblin Plate Mail, now you're attacking with a 3-2 menace. Or curving it into your 2-drop, your like 2-mana 1/1 plus amass one. Well, then you're attacking with the 1/1 that has haste, and now your amass has haste because it already existed. So like Tidings of War on turn one is actually good. Plus, are you in red white and you pitch this to recruit, and then you just have a real thing sitting in the graveyard? I just think this card is good.
I agree. Also, right. Speaking of uncommons, neither one of us, I feel like we should at least shout out the black uncommon that's the Putrid Leech, the one on a black 2/2 where you can pay 2 life to give it +2/+2. That easily could have been on the top black uncommons lists and was very difficult for me to decide between that and down to Goblin Town.
Yeah, that card is very good. I agree. Up. Give me a sleeper.
Warg Tactics. This is one and a green for an instant. Choose one, destroy target creature with flying, or put a +1/+1 counter on target creature you control against trample and hexproof until end of turn.
Finally, they reprinted hexproof. Nope, no more of this indestructible nonsense. We got hexproof back.
Yeah, and at 2 mana, like you'd play that trick, and I think when you need it to be plummet and it kills a smog or whatever, that seems very strong.
I agree. I like that. This isn't really a sleeper. I just think this is gonna be a player, stir up trouble, single black sorcery. As an additional cost to cast it, sack an artifact or creature or pay 4 to destroy target creature. The tools are there for this card. Like sometimes it's like maybe you just want one of these in your deck. Like I think good black decks can run multiple copies of stir up trouble happily.
I agree. I think that is going to be a banger. Speaking of Warg Tactics killing smog, Smog the Great Calamity is on my sleeper commons list. This is 5 red for a 5/5 flying legendary dragon at common. And it's got an adventure, Spew Flame, 4 and a red. Spew Flame deals 5 damage to target creature. This looks like the real deal to me as far as finishers in a control style deck. Like red black is going to get like a big heavy hitter after like a top end removal spell that'll be the 23rd card. And I think Smog could be truly excellent in like an off color blue red type deck. Like I think that might actually be its best home.
There was in Duskmourne, there was a 5-mana deal 6. And then if you had Delirium, you got to like do the red draw card, like exile the top card of your library. You can play it until the end of your next turn. This is 5-mana deal 5, draw a 7-mana 5/5. It's really good. I think this is really good. This is like the definition of a sleeper common. Like, yeah, it's not going to be good as the cheaper ones because it's expensive. It's a little clunky, but you're never going to be happy to have Spew Flame cast against you.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah. Next up for me, continuing to sing Black's praises. I just have all of Black's comments that I'm going to talk about today. Front porch sentries. One on a black 2/2. When it dies, target creature and opponent controls gets -1/-1 until end of turn. It's got types. I think this is going to be annoying. This like eats recruit boards for breakfast, like trade with an X2 and then pick off a 1/1. I think sentries is good. Like, yeah. Sleeper is probably not right because this is probably going to be appropriately rated, but I like this card.
Dory, Bearer of Friends, is up next for me. This is 2 and a red for a 3/2 legendary dwarf at common. It's got trample, and when Dory enters, create a treasure token.
2/3 of the way to storied with this card.
2/3. So if you two drop into Dory, you are an enduring story.
I really like this card, and I'm curious about how splashy this format is going to feel. I think not. Like, there's fixing in treasures and in the like common Evolving Wilds variant that has like, what is it, Halfling Cycling. But I like your take more about like, it's not going to be splashy or soupy. It's just going to be easier to get into the 5 non-supported color pairs.
Well, and I think the other thing I would say for a point for why I wouldn't anticipate it being splashy is I think a lot of the power is shoved towards the bottom of the curve. And you're not necessarily going to want to splash your efficient 2, 3, 4 drops. You want to splash cards like Smog or whatever, like bigger, late game, heavier hitters that are single pipped. And I just don't think there are a lot of those types of cards.
Another black common for me, Golem Silent Slinker. 3 and a black for a 4/3 with menace, and it has an Adventure of Meager Meal, which is single black sorcery. Put a +1/+1 counter on up to one target creature. Target player gains 2 life. I played with this on Thursday. This is why I had a good experience with this card. That's why I wanted to talk about it. That it's not hard to slot Meager Meal along your curve somewhere. And that feels like gain 2 life plus buff your creature feels good. And 4 mana, 4/3 menace is a real threat that is tough to tussle with. I like both halves of this card.
Yeah. And last for me, which I am not even necessarily sure I'm a believer in this card, not because I played with it, but just in the draft, I wasn't as excited about picking it up as I thought I would be, which is Bowside Wanderers. Bowside's got to be Bowside, right?
Yeah.
Bowside Wanderers,
maybe
4 green, green.
Bow, right?
Bowside?
Yeah.
Bowside Wanderers. 4GG for a common 4/4 Elf Scout. When it enters, look at the top 4 cards of your library. You may reveal a permanent card from among them and put it into your hand. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. And it has landfall. Whenever land you control enters, this creature gets +2/+2 until end of turn. I think this is going to be like fine top end. I don't think you're ever picking it aggressively in the draft.
No, but it's power at common. It's a 2-for-1. Like, I still feel like even
but
if my
black and blue get their 2-for-1s at 3 on the curve instead of 6.
I think this is a good card. I mean, if Wood Elves is good, this is good. Because like, what are you ramping to with your Wood Elves, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, what else do I have? I wanted to talk about Gandalf Wandering Wizard. 4 and a blue for a 4/5 with Ward 3. And you can pay 6 to have Gandalf's owner shuffle him into their library and draw 3 cards. You're just out.
I'm out. I don't think this card's good.
But it's Gandalf.
It is Gandalf.
They wouldn't put Gandalf on a bad card.
I think they did him dirty. I don't think Gandalf is great here. I think 5 mana, 4/5 Ward 3 is not very good. And I think the buyout clause of shuffling him in and drawing 3 cards. Like, where is his home? Blue-white doesn't want him. Blue-green doesn't really want him. Like,
blue-green.
Bowside Wanderers is better than Gandalf in blue-green.
Well, but you got Wood Elves on 3, Gandalf on 4, Bowside on 5.
How many Gandalfs are you running?
One.
Yeah, I'm out on this card. Sorry.
But Gandalf sort of... No, I guess it doesn't really stop you from decking because you shuffle him in, but then draw 3. So you're losing that decking race. All right, never mind. The other one I wanted to just throw out there, like white has the go wide stuff with white is real, right? We've got three ways at common to buff your team. I think the best being Dwarven Provisioner, the 1 and a white 2/2 dwarf, and has an activated ability of 3 and a white creatures you control get +1/+1 until end of turn. I think that's a real card.
Yeah,
in the go wide.
I agree. That's a good card. The question is white. The go wide thing is clearly supported in white. The question mark for me is, does it just get to compete? Like, that is finicky, assembling a bunch of tokens and pumping a bunch of tokens. Like, what red black looks like it gets to do is just going to happen over and over and over and over again, very consistently and very powerfully. So the question for me about not a white is not, is the support there? It's, is it good enough? That's the question for me.
Yeah, it's a question worth giving. And I have two notable omissions. I said one of them was Wood Elves and the other one is Enchanted River's Grasp. This is the 2 and a blue aura. And when this aura enters, tap enchanted creature and remove all counters from it. That kills the amass token if you put it on that. Enchanted creature loses all abilities and doesn't untap during its controller's untap step. I just think there's enough bounce, and certainly blue has bounce, self-bounce and switcheroo, and black has tons of sacrifice. I just think this is not good.
I'm here for that. I think that's probably a good take. I do like how they elegantly solved the amass thing with the remove all counters from it, because that used to be like, is there a pacifism and I'm going to be stuck with all my amass being terrible for the rest of the game? Like, that's a very elegant solution to that problem.
Right. I think they in the past have been like, you can't put it on a thing that has +1/+1 counters to like work around that. All right. I think that the last thing we're missing is top multicolor cards.
Oh, yeah. I have some multicolor uncommons.
I do too. You called me correctly. Large Bear is my number one.
There we go. Got him.
My number two is Thranduil, the Sindarian Liege. That's the 2 Simic 2/3 Elf Lord, landfall, make a 1/1 elf, and then has the adventure that lets you mill 4 and put 2 lands from among them into your hand. And Bolg of the North, a 3 black red 5/5. When it enters, you can sack another creature. If you do, it deals damage equal to that creature's power to another target creature.
Thranduil just seems like Pinecone Strike bait to me. I mean, it's a powerful card, and you're going to run it.
Me Dies to Doomblade.
Pinecone Strike is so good in this format. So good. But yeah, I like all three of those. For me, I have Bolg of the North as my number one, which is the 5/5 sack a thing. I have Sylvan Reveler as my number two. That's the blue-green draw engine where you draw a discard. You can bring lands back. You can bring it back. Does all the stuff. We talked about it earlier. And in the number three slot, I had a hard time finding a number three, and I kind of like blue-white recruit as a deck, so I put Bard the Bowman. 1 blue-white for a 1/3 reach. When you draw your second card each turn, put a +1/+1 counter on target creature. It gains lifelink until end of turn.
No Large Bear love, though.
I mean, I like Large Bear. Large Bear should probably be on there instead of Bard the Bowman. Large Bear hits like a truck. I think I would like Large Bear more if it were 3 black-black instead of 3 gold guardian.
You like Sylvan Reveler. I like Thranduil. Like, Large Bear is good. Like, the signposts for green-blue being good. Like,
bodes well for green-blue,
If you like Wood Elves, if Wood Elves ends up being good, and my take is trash, I don't know. Elves is good. All right, so are we drafting blue-red and, blue-black day one?
I really hope that take pans out. And I actually have a fair amount of belief that it's going to be, I don't know how frequent it's going to be, but not that it's going to be totally wrong to do.
Yeah.
Those colors just look so much deeper than green and white.
Like, I'm like, I love Bilbo as a 3-mana draw card creature.
You love Bilbo. You've got to love Plunder the Troll Shaws, which is the card draw with flashback. Well,
and I love Rage into the Valley. I'm just like, what if I could just play the two colors together?
That's what I'm saying. Sounds pretty great.
Forcing blue-black day one. Let's go.
All right. You heard it here first, folks. Anything else? We leave it all in the field?
What's your excitement level?
That's a very dangerous question to ask on a public podcast forum, but I mean, I think my honest answer is that I don't think this is going to have a lot of depth or complexity. I think it looks pretty core-set-ish, and I think the good cards are pretty obviously good. I think the potentially most interesting thing about it is those off-color decks and exploring what those look like. But I think small set, I don't think this is going to have tons of depth or complexity.
Yeah, not going to be a ton of hidden stuff. I am excited to draft Grixis colors week one until proven otherwise.
Well, sure. And red black looks like a very fun deck. Like, I could see the draft being kind of boring, but the gameplay being interesting or whatever. But yeah, I think I am lukewarm on going into it so far. I mean, I will be jazzed to draft a new format on Tuesday. Always will be. But I think more my concern is not about the initial drafts. It's about the depth and longevity of the format.
Yeah. Well, we only have to play it for like 2 weeks or 3 weeks or something before we start getting previews for Reality Fracture.
Yeah. So, are you pick twoing or are you picking eighting?
I'm pick one-ing. I'm going to be pick one-ing for life.
You're pick one-ing at a time?
I've had enough pick two for a lifetime. It does not work for me. So I'll do the pick ones.
That's where I will be living as well.
And we'll have all of our updated thoughts. And I think and probably a very clear picture of the format for next week's episode.
Yeah, I will be jamming. School starts Tuesday. Also Hobbit release. It'll be a late night for me. I will be school, straight into marching band, straight into Hobbit drafts at 9:30
p.m. Let's go. Attaboy.
Back sleep. In the saddle. Great place as always to wrap us up. Thank you as always to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen.
You can find all of our content at lordsoflimited.com. Links to all of our episode backlogs, our YouTube channel, our Twitch streams, our Patreon page. All Lords of Limited stuff can be found on our website.
If you've got any feedback about the show or any questions, shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later.